This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about the saltiest commanders in the format. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about commanders that make people super salty, why they make people salty, what do we do with this information? Should you not play salty commanders? So salty commanders is our topic for today, and joining me to talk about this, Krim's still traveling, so we got the small crew, Tomer and Phil. What's up, guys? How's it going today?
We're missing the player.
I like being salty.
Yeah, we're missing Krim for the one play these commanders because I don't know if anyone of us actually plays one of them.
Tomer is.
There's a few. There's a few that I personally play, so that I see on people's lists.
I
get to talk about that.
I play them on occasion for Clash. I don't think I have like a personal build of any of the saltiest ones that I take with me to like every Magic Con or whatever. So I don't think I have one of those, but I do play them on occasion. And I don't know, I like salty cards, although Commander is kind of different for me. I try to be careful about making people too salty in Commander in specific. But anyway, we'll get into all that in a minute. First, we got a couple of sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment when your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently did an Overrun tier list podcast, and our top comment comes from Spawn89920001 says, Pathbreaker Ibex, am I a joke to you?
Ooh, wait, what? Yeah, we kind of...
we didn't forget about it. It was on the sheet.
We had so much time to go over things, so some stuff.
So how we do the tier list usually is we put a whole bunch of ideas on a spreadsheet and give them the grade. But then we have like an hour-ish for the podcast. So we usually cut it down to like 15 or so cards because if we try to do like 30 or 40 cards, it's just like so incredibly long. So Ibex is on there. Ibex is good. There's just so many green overruns that it didn't actually make the final video. But it is a very good card. Anyway, let's talk some salty commanders. So before we get into these commanders, we got a pretty good list of commanders that make people salty. I'm curious, what makes a commander salty? Is there anything that like sticks out? Like, what are we looking for in a salty commander? Is there any like common threads that kind of ties together saltiness? Well, what makes people salty with someone's commander? You guys got any ideas?
I mean, it's multiple factors. Some check multiple boxes, though. Being overpowered or oppressive. I think oppressive is the worst one, but also overpowered. If you're just getting freebies, it kind of sucks for the table, like Itali or something. But also stacks and oppression. That is,
I think those are two big ones,
Yeah. I feel like when I'm looking at, like, at least according to EDH Rex salt score, which is like something that we've been looking at, to figure out like our lists. If it's really powerful, like too easily broken, which I like to say like a high power floor, like just playing it, even if you're playing it unoptimized, it's gonna be really strong. And it's very popular. Yes. That combination means like, oh, I'm seeing like XYZ all the time, and also it just pup stomps all the time. That's one. But then number two, and this is like, it doesn't matter how popular the commander is, if it's like in any way staxy, if it like prevents or slows down opponents from playing the game of Magic. Opponents want to cast, people want to cast their spells, you know, they want to do their thing. And if your commander actively prevents people from doing their thing, that's salty, regardless of how unpopular the commander is at the table. So that's how I see it, at least.
I think those are two very, very big categories that if you just look through like what people think of as the saltiest commanders come up a lot. The other thing I'd add that I think plays into it is commanders that are really strong and heavily played and also hard to interact with. I think it can go the other way, too, mm-hmm. where like Edgar Markov just sits in the command zone, or like the Narset where you chain together all the extra turns and it has hexproof. Or we saw a lot of complaining about Voja not that long ago when it for a couple years ago when it first came out because of the ward, so you can't kill it and it snowballs so hard. So I think that is another thing that makes people salty is like your commander does something really busted and I can't really stop it from doing the busted thing. So I just got to sit there and let you do the busted thing because of how your card's designed. So I think those are probably the biggest thing. One other question before we get to the cards, which I think is interesting. Should people just not play salty commanders? Like, so if there's a commander that everyone thinks is salty, do you not build a deck around it? Because I would worry if I was thinking about building, I don't know, let's pick a classic, Turgrid. Turgrid is a classic salty commander because you got to discard and sack all your stuff. If someone's thinking about building a commander deck, should they think twice about building a Turgrid deck? Because there's a risk that they spend their money and they get all the cards and then their play group, or if they go out in, you know, a game in, at a Magic Con or something, people are going to be like, oh, I don't want to play against Turgrid. Or your play group's going to play it once or twice and be like, dude, I'm not playing that against that anymore. Tear it apart or like, find another deck. Like, would you discourage people from building around these, or doesn't it work that way?
I have two mindsets on this one, because what I wanted to say is like, obviously build what you want to build, but just give your play group a heads up. And if your heads up, if your group is okay with a salty commander, a traditionally salty commander, then by all means have fun, have at it. And also, like, if people are playing at higher power tables, I think the salt factor kind of falls off. Like if you're playing like bracket four and everybody's bringing out the big guns, I think it's more appropriate for like even salty commanders like Turgrid, I think is more appropriate in bracket four. On the other hand, I did just retire my poison deck because I was tired of everybody getting so antsy about poison. I think the deck is still fine. But like, you know, if people are still scared about poison, I just didn't bring it out that much. And I'm like, well, if I'm not bringing it out that much, then why did I build it? So a little bit of regrets there. And then, yeah, that's so I'm of kind of two minds of it. Just it can work. It's just like probably double check. What a, sometimes also no.
And also sometimes no. What do you think, Phil? Like, do you tell people to avoid building around salty commanders?
I mean, the overpowered commanders are kind of fine, and it kind of makes sense that people want to build around them, especially new players. Like, you want to kind of start with, I don't know, like, what's the IAC, the Simic landfall thing? It's like, it's the like thing I want to do the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Mirim is another example. It's just like, yeah, I want to do dragons, and I want to have more dragons. And it is perfectly understandable and even a bit fine if it's one of the powerful ones, although you might run into the problem of people asking you to play a different deck eventually. If you play Turgrid, though, that is different. Turgrid or Narset extra turns, Vorin Klex, like all these like stacksy stuff. Maybe think about it and probably don't spend too much money on cards that only go in this deck. That is.
Oh, we should also probably explain these commanders. If we're starting to say specific commanders, I think we're gonna read out the cards and stuff.
We're gonna get into the commanders in just a second. Yeah. The one last thing that I want to say about that is, if it's a commander that you know is salty, I would actually encourage you not to not build it, because I think that Tomer is correct that it's all about context. If your playgroup all wants to do that, or you're playing super high-powered, perfectly fine, build whatever you want. But if you're a new player and you're thinking about this, I would actually think through this, because there is a risk that you go out and spend a lot of money. That commander decks can be hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars in some cases, but you go and build a very expensive deck thinking, oh, this is going to be cool, especially when it's like a pre-con commander or like a new commander from the new set that ends up being salty, and you're like, oh, I'm going to build around this hot new card or this hot new pre-con thing, and then you find out that your playgroup really doesn't like playing against it and no one's having fun. you might end up kind of wasting that money. So I think it actually is important to think through. Agree with Tomer 100% that context is everything with Commander, and it's all about what your group's comfortable with. But I would definitely at least be aware before you build around a salty Commander that there is a chance that you won't get as much use out of it as if you build around a less salty Commander, because some people are not going to want to play against a salty Commander or not want to play against it again and again and again. So I think it is worth keeping in mind. But anyway, Tomer, you're right. We should talk about some of these salty Commanders, and let's start with you, Tomer. What is one of the saltiest Commanders? Why is it salty? Take it away.
So it's interesting because we're talking about cards that are super overpowered but also hard to interact with. And then we also talk about things that stop people from playing the game. This one is, according to EDH Rec at least, the saltiest out of all of them and doesn't actually fit in that category super well. It's Vivi Ornithyr. It's a 3 mana, 0/3 wizard. It has an activated ability of 0 mana. You add X mana in any combination of blue and or red, where X is Vivi's power. Activate only on your turn and only once each turn. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Vivi, and it deals 1 damage to each opponent. So this is one of the most popular commanders ever printed, and it only came out last year. It's a character that's one of the most popular characters from the Final Fantasy IP, and Final Fantasy is one of the best-selling sets of all time, or it is the best-selling set of all time. It is also the most popular Izzet commander by a lot. So it's fabulously popular, fabulously overpowered. This thing just generates so much mana so quickly while also growing so large, while also being your win con by pinging everybody. So it's gloriously overpowered. It's not hard to interact with, though. It has no ward. It has no indestructible. It has none of that stuff. And yet, it is the saltiest out of all of them. And I think that's just sheer the popularity of it and how explosive this commander is. You cannot allow a VV deck to untap. And because it's one of the most popular cards, one of the most popular characters, everybody wants to build it. It's oh yeah, I love Vivi,
yeah,
the character.
My favorite.
I'm a newer player. This card sounds strong. Let me try it out. And then I've heard so many stories of newer players picking up Commander, building a Vivi deck, and then being very disappointed to find out that whenever I play Vivi, I just get taken out first right off the bat, and I'm not allowed to play the game, and it really sucks. Or I thought this deck would be fine. It turns out it just stomps no matter what I did. I even heard somebody build an Enchantress version of it. They're like, don't worry, my deck's not like those other decks. I'm building Enchantress, is it? And it was still too strong, and all of them had to take it apart. And that bothers me a lot. I really wish Wizards of the Coast is more careful of designing these commanders, especially as bait for newer players. And that's a frustrating aspect of this card for me, salt-wise. And I think the general salt is just you play Vivi, either I shut you down the turn you play it, or I lose, and there's no in-between. And it's just so warping, not fun.
And that's other risk about building around a salty commander. It's not just this altruistic, think of your poor playgroup. Maybe they won't enjoy playing against it. A lot of times it also ends up being unfun for you, because if your playgroup is good and knows how to play Magic, they know that, I just can't let you untap with that card, so you're never going to be able to do anything with your VV anyway, because if you do get to do anything with the card, then you just win the game on the spot. And I do like that you brought up Wizards, because I really think this is a failure on Wizards' part. I think, building such an iconic character that you knew people are going to want to play with the most best-selling set of all time, which I guess they didn't know at the time that it would end up that way, but still they knew it was going to be a big set, and making it this over-the-top powerful that it's actually making it so people who want to play it are having to tear their deck apart, I think that's actually a pretty big negative, especially considering how many new players were building around this card and brought into the game by Final Fantasy. So I hope Wizards really takes that into consideration, because I know they talked about wanting to make sure it was exciting and kind of twisting some extra knobs to make sure it was really exciting. Maybe it would have been a better experience for everyone if it was a little less exciting in this case. But Phil, where are you at on VB?
I mean, I'm pretty much exactly there. There's an additional point. First of all, I was kind of shocked that it's the third most salty card.
Yeah.
Full stop,
ever.
Apparently.
Just not even in Commanders. It's just we're top three.
while it's not checking the stacks box, it is checking another box that we didn't talk about yet, which is the solitaire aspect. Because if the VV deck untaps, it is usually kind of non-deterministic, long turn taking, and people understandably hate this, especially if it's combined with, no offense, like if a newer player plays a VV deck, they probably don't know the line. So if you go through this super quickly and say ping, 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 I think that's way better. But most people probably say, play VV, brainstorm, and then think. Think again when they draw the next card, brainstorm, lock themselves, and then got to get out of it. And then sometimes ping. Maybe they forget a ping. There's also a lot of triggers there.
Two triggers at a time.
Unfortunate for such a popular character.
It's like Sensei's Divining Top. I don't mind playing against Krim playing Sensei's Divining Top because he's been playing it hardcore for 20 years now and he's very good. But if you've never played Sensei's Divining Top before, I really don't want to play against you playing Sensei's Divining Top because it just takes so much luck.
Because he's going to always run counterbalance with it.
No, ask Gavin about that. You're good.
Okay, I also wanted to say, like, VV is fine at higher power tables. Like, if you're I'm playing a bracket 4, he's fine. He's also CDH playable. Like, I played him on our CDH episode. I know he's not the best, is it? Like, top tier, is it, commander? I think that's the Flip Ral Zarek, or the Flip Ral, or whatever it's called, from Modern Horizons. But, like, yeah, definitely CDH playable, you know? Maybe tier 2, if not tier 1. And bracket 4, I imagine he's also fine too. But like when the vast majority of people are not playing at those brackets and it's so appealing to newer players, that's where it causes the issue. I don't think people would be complaining about VV if he was only being played at bracket 4 and CDH. But the reality is a lot of people try to play him at, you know, chiller tables and it's just too strong. It's too strong just inherently, no matter what you do.
I mean, that's a perfect segue, because one thing I want to ask about each of these commanders before we move on to the next one, can you build a non-salty version of it? And I know, Tomer, you mentioned hearing about someone trying to build VV Enchantress or something, and it was still overpowered. Yeah. Can you build a non-salty VV deck, or is just the way VV is designed as a card, no matter how, and this is, I know you could play VV in 99 lands and it wouldn't be salty, but assuming you're building like a real deck of some kind, like, could you build a non-salty VV deck, or is it just, no matter what you try, it's going to be salty?
You have to actively avoid non-creature spells. It's like, you could, in theory. Like you said, you could play just all lands.
Got him. Yeah, not salty
like,
now.
Nobody actually does that. Nobody actually does that. So,
it's not as bad as other commanders, though. At least Vivi doesn't say your opponent can't cast or your opponent's spell casts more or something.
Not as bad as other commanders, Aphil. Why don't you give us an even worse commander then? What's your first salty commander here?
So the first thing I think of when I think of salty commanders, which I have luckily only run into once, and I don't even know why I agreed to play against this, it is Grand August the Arbiter Augustine the Fourth.
Just classic.
4 mana, 2/3, whatever text box, and it's like, it is white spells you cast cost 1 less to cast, blue spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And then, why is this 2 different text boxes? And then your opponent's spells cost 1 more to cast. So the cast reduction is kind of broken already, because this leads to storm turns and long turns. And then the opponents get just straight up taxed for 1. Not even any... your opponent's red or black or something different. There it is. Just every spell costs 1 more, and your spells get double cheap for multicolor spells. That is the wording.
That's why it's the 2 different lines. Because if white and blue spells you cost 1 less to cost, so
that's
be
what
like,
I mean.
Oh,
it is
2
mana discount.
Extra gravy on this? This is already a gravy train. Why does it have extra gravy? It is so disgusting. And this one you can't build non-sucky, because it just sucks by itself. You cannot cast it. Maybe Seth can play it and play Birds
just not play
instead.
My commander.
Just never play it.
Whatever, I just say I want it for the ramp. What do you think about that?
Alongside the extra ramp.
It's an extra.
This one surprised me, because one thing I think of with salty commanders is if they're not heavily played, are they even really salty? Like, I mean, I know there's a cult called Hikori Dust Drinker, which I don't think we're actually going to talk about, so I'll mention it now. But it's a four drop that winter orbs, right? It's a creature, it's a legend, and winter orbs you. It's very salty. It's high on the EDH rec salt score. But I never see anyone play it. So at first I thought Grand Arbiter was one of those cards, right? Where, yeah, it's super salty, but I never actually play against it. I just looked on EDH Rec. It is, according to them, the 150th most popular commander, which is not like VV level of most popular, but there's like 3,000 commanders now or something. This is actually pretty high up there. So this is one you'll actually run into. And yeah, this just falls into the stacks category, right? It's just like it's a commander that stops your opponent from doing their thing, which is one of the most guaranteed ways to make people salty. And as Phil said, there's no way you can build an unsalty version because that Staxing Thalia line is going to be on there. No matter what your deck's doing, you're still going to be Staxing the table.
It would be good without the stacks line, though. The double reduction is already
still pretty decent.
It's almost a little interesting. I don't think we have this kind of text on anything like the double reduction.
No, not the double.
So it would have been better.
I wonder if we'll see a different version someday. If we'll see a Grand Arbiter, maybe just embrace the ramp.
Power cramped.
Yeah, power creep it a little bit. VV version of Grand Arbiter.
It needs Ward 3.
Yes, it needs Ward. Oh, God. Well, all right. Well,
I mean, it kind of is Ward 1.
it kind of does.
It is kind of like Ward 1, yes. You have to pay one extra for your swords or whatever.
Yeah, that's a very salty commander. But let's move on. For my first pick, there's so many salty commanders. But speaking of Ward, I wanted to shout out this card because I know this was considered to be one of the saltiest commanders a couple of years ago. Because this is Voja, Jaws of Conclave. And this one, I think, hits on the other end of what makes commander salty. So it's a 5-drop Naya, 5/5 wolf with vigilance, trample, and most importantly, ward 3. And it says, whenever it attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, where X is the number of elves you control, and then draw a card for each wolf you control. So normally what you do with Voja, most common way to play it, you play like an elf ball deck, right? You play a bunch of elves, they make mana, you can turbo this out really quickly. If you can make a bunch of fast mana and get this down on like turn 3, in theory, your opponents cannot interact with it, right? Because it has ward 3, so they're not going to have enough mana. And then a single attack from this is going to make your team huge. It's going to draw you probably a card, maybe a couple cards if you get like lucky. So the issue with Voja is it's really hard to interact with. And I think this card led to a pretty big outcry from the community about Ward. Mm-hmm. And I think actually led to Wizards kind of pulling back on Ward and printing more cards that can like nowhere to run, that can theoretically interact with Ward and stop Ward from being a problem. And I think that that's something that we've seen on a few other commanders, but I think Voja is like a very clean example of like, without the Ward, I think this card perfectly fine. It wouldn't be salty, but the Ward just makes it so annoying for people to play against. So what do you guys think about Voja and the idea of these hard to interact with commanders being salty commanders?
From what I remember too, in terms of like their changing on Ward, at least Gavin, I think said Ward 1 is fine. Ward 2, it's good. We'll use sometimes as well too. Ward 3 though is like, that's where we cross the line. Like Ward 1 and 2 is fine. Ward 3 is like we're moving towards like it's essentially just hexproof territory.
There is a point.
So we're gonna adjust. Yeah. So like Ward 1 and 2 still okay. Ward 3 is like, it's too much. I think this is a little bit too much. Like the annoying thing is this is basically like you said, it's elf ball. So you want to go wide. You want to play like your turn 1 mana dork. Turn 2, you play a mana dork. Maybe turn 3, you still need a mana dork or something like that. Or you get out Voja and then you're going to swing the following turn.
Yeah.
And basically it just means because you can't really easily single target removal Voja, like a Swords of Plaster costs 4 mana, which is it takes a person's entire turn essentially to do that. And if you have something, God forbid, more than 1 mana for a removal spell, it ain't happening.
No.
And even worse if like you have haste for Voja too, and it's like, okay, GG. I think it's just like basically you need a board wipe on the first like turn by turn 4, or else you're just gonna get hit for a bajillion damage. And I think that's the Ward was too much. If it didn't have Ward 3, I think this is fine, honestly.
Yeah. I hard agree. If it was Ward 1 or Ward 2, it would be fine. And it leads to another one of those bad gameplay experiences where either you Voja snowball to victory and people are like, okay, that game sucked, or your opponent does have the turn 3 or turn 4 Wrath. They reset your board, you don't rebuild, and the game sucked for you. So it's one of those very polarized outcome mm-hmm. style of commanders for the most part. But have you played with this one, Phil?
Yeah, I think this one's kind of fine. It is super strong, and it has this problem, but it's definitely not the only one. I admit that it's very, very, very strong, but maybe it's overhyped a little. Like, not that it's not strong, obviously, but isn't it, like, Elf Ball is always, I always got a board wipe Elf Ball. And Voja at least has the advantage. It kind of sucks that it doesn't exclude changelings because they are extra, extra good with it. It also sucks that it puts the counters on each creature, not just the elves or something. That would also help. It is super strong.
And if
you
have changelings, you draw cards.
Yeah,
off
the changelings
wolves.
Are. Yeah, I would love if it's. It makes sense for Voja if it's elves and wolves, but I would love it if it just rewarded wolves, because then wolves would have a cool commander, and I kind of want to build a wolf deck with this.
That'd be cool,
that would be neat.
There would also be elves in the early game. I didn't design the card.
Would Voja Wolves be salty? Like, is this a commander that you can build a not salty version of then, you think?
If
like,
you don't have the
elves. Are you running elves? Yeah, you're not running elves. If it literally just said,
you
just like, you draw cards and you put counters equal to the number of wolves you control, I feel like it would still be a very, like, a solid commander, but, like,
it'd be
the
so
fact
much
that
worse.
You could just use the elves, because you're just being rewarded for having your turn one elves, right? The turn one elves
the
are
turn
not
one
just...
elves, and then Gala Greetus and stuff. Also, like, I would run this in every Naya deck. No.
Those cards are already good by themselves.
Yeah, what
I
else
think. You don't need to
this.
Reward...
Yeah, yeah, they're already good. You don't need this really strong payoff to make it work. Yep. Well, at least some good came out of this one, where Wizards, I think, does know now that they got to be at least cautious with high ward cards, because like Domer said, or ward cost, because like Domer said, it does become hexproof at some point, and Voja is actually kind of edging on
I
that
have it
a
in
bit.
Changelings, by the way.
Oh, of course you do, Domer.
I'm thinking about cutting it because I have no haste. Like, I have, like, two haste in the Blizzard entire deck, so every single time I cast Voja, everybody's like, oh my god, Voja's coming.
I mean,
it's like, yeah, obviously it is. But then you have a full turn cycle to beat me up, and I'm like, oh, I'm a little bean, you guys.
You do know that the Ur-Dragon is one of the saltiest commanders, Tomer.
I don't understand why. Why is that?
Probably because of your Changeling deck. But anyways.
Do we want to talk about it?
It's your turn, so you can talk about whatever you want, Tomer. What's your next salty commander?
All right, you know what? I'll leave my next salty one for later. Let's talk about Ur-Dragon, because I think... Ur-Dragon's absolutely fine. No, he's not. So Ur-Dragon is, I think it's the most popular commander according to EDH Rec. Let me see.
Ooh,
top commanders of all time. Past 2 years, it's rank number one. Let's see, past
Whoa,
week.
You're right.
Is it still past week?
Past
no,
week
no,
is
okay.
something completely different.
No, it's still top 10 in the past week, though.
Yeah, past 2 years, it is the number one commander. So if you play X amount of commander, you probably know this card, but just in case... It's a 9-mana, 5-color commander, so it's 4 and Wooburg, for a 10/10 legendary creature dragon avatar. It has flying, and whenever one or more dragons you control attack, draw that many cards, then you may put a permanent card from your hand onto the battlefield. And if that's all it did, it would be pretty weak. But here's the bonkers thing. It has a little mechanic everybody loves called Eminence, which means... As long as Ur-Dragon is in the command zone or on the battlefield, other dragon spells you cast cost one less to cast. So Eminence is a very interesting mechanic because it kind of defeats the purpose of casting your commander because you don't need to cast your commander. You from turn zero, as long as Ur-Dragon's on the battlefield or in the command zone, all your dragon spells cost one less to cast. And then on top of it, when you cast him, he gives a huge card advantage, mana advantage, once he's actually on the battlefield. Which, I mean, 9 mana is still a lot. But, like, the main thing is Eminence. And I think the main salt about this card is that this Eminence ability, you cannot meaningfully interact with it. You cannot, if the opponent doesn't want to cast Ur-Dragon from the command zone, there's literally nothing you could do to stop the Eminence from occurring. All their dragons are just going to cost one less for the entirety of the game, and there's nothing you can do about it. I feel like sometimes eminence is fine depending on how weak the actual effect is or how they tweak it. But this one is obviously not the best design. You know, like minus one for all your dragons is just very good.
Everything's just broken very good. If it costs and one less.
Yeah.
The thing that also bothers me a lot that I guess I think isn't talked about enough is the fact that it's also five color. Like, I think there's a huge advantage to having access to all five colors in Commander. And I would be much more okay with Ur Dragon, for example, if it was like mono red. If it was mono red and exact same text, I think that I would not have a single peep of complaints. But the fact that it's like, oh, you get all the colors, you get all the best cards in the entire format, but also on the top of that, you get this broken eminence ability. That feels egregious to me. And I think that's probably why people also get salty with it. It's just like, it's too much.
This is very much almost the perfect salty commander. I think we talked about a lot of these, but I think there's five things that I've noticed really make people salty with a commander, which is you can't interact with it. It's overpowered. It's heavily played. It's designed specifically to be busted in commander, I think makes some cards more salty for people. And then it stacks. The only thing this is missing is the stacks. It's not a stacks thing, but every other mark of what would make for a salty commander. I feel like the Ur-Dragon hits it. You can't interact with the Eminence. It is the most popular commander in existence, so you see it very often. It is very overpowered, in large part because of the Eminence ability, and it was designed specifically for commander with Eminence ability. So yeah, I think it's just too much. And another thing that makes me salty about this, and this is more of a personal thing, and I guess they tried to fight back a little bit with Miriam Sentinel Worm, which also became a salty commander, but I hate commanders that are just like the default best thing to do with the tribe or with your theme. Yeah. And this for a long time, at least until Miriam came around, and arguably still now, this is just the default, right? There's no reason not to play your dragon. If you're a dragon deck, you get all the dragons, you get all the colors, it's super busted. So people just always play that one. And there's so many cool legendary dragons that people could build decks around that we never see because they're all just playing their dragon instead.
Permanent cost reduction is just not okay. I don't know how they couldn't have play tested this. Like how do you play test this and see any dragon and reduce one mana from it and say, no, we would have printed that card. Like every card gets broken if it's one mana less, or at least playable. And then the good cards are just crazy broken. I kind of like Thomas Changeling deck, though. It feels a little clever. It is broken, though. having one mana things cost zero mana, that is.
I feel like that's the one of the lesser salty ways that you can play the Ur-Dragon, the Changeling deck. Mm-hmm. Like, I do kind of like the Changeling deck compared to, like, a Dragon Ur-Dragon deck.
It is kind of cute in a way, even though it's powerful.
It's more like my Changelings are two mana 2/2s, so, like, if I cast them for one mana as 2/2s, it's less egregious, you know?
Than some big dragon.
At least when I bring out Changelings, people ask to see the Changeling deck. I guess it's like less salty. I will be in defense of Ur-Dragon. I understand what they were going for here. Because like dragons, at least historically, especially back when they printed this, which is what, like 20...
Commander 2017, it says.
2017. Like dragons historically have a very high mana curve. And if you want to build a dragon deck, and you have like a bunch of dragons that start with from mana value 5 and go all the way to like 9, it's going to be really hard to do anything in the game. You know, like you need to have green, for example, for ramp, or you need signets and stuff. And then you're going to be like the first 4 turns are going to be ramping. And then each subsequent turn, you play one dragon at a time. It's not the most effective strategy. So I can see why like they would want a commander that helps you cast your dragons and help you ramp into dragons earlier. I think they did a brilliant job with Giada. I think Giada is like a fixed version of this for angels, where it's like we have a 2-drop commander that starts ramping you out, taps for 1 extra mana, ramping you out your angels. And that's perfect. That's what angels want, because just like dragons, angels have this really high curve. They're all like 4 mana and above, and dragons have the same issue. And they wanted to address that, I think, with this design, being like, we want to cast your dragons faster. So you feel like a dragon deck, you're not like casting 2 dragons before the game is over. Great idea, just the execution might have been a little bit overboard. And again, if it was a Gruul commander, if it was just like 2 colors, I feel like it would have been fine. I would have been okay with it 5, though, it's like why does it have to have everything, man? Why does it have to have everything?
Yeah.
It's a little bit silly.
I still would not like Eminence, even if it was just 2 colors, but I do think it would not be the number one, like, most played commander of all time.
Mono
or, like,
red.
As heavily played if it was mono red or 2 color.
Mono red. Yeah, mono red. Do you think Eminence is I feel like Eminence is kind of okay sometimes. It just depends on how they do it.
No.
Like, Erebo, War of the World, for example. Do you guys, what do you guys think about Erebo? It's like the Selesnya one, and its Eminence is at the beginning of your combat on your turn, if it's in the command zone or in the battlefield. Another target cat you control gets +3/+3 until end of turn.
So, like, I think Eminence, I think Erebo is fine. I think you can argue the new knight one, Sadar Jabari or whatever, is, like, kind of okay. That's an Eminence commander, right? It, like, loots whenever you attack with a knight or something.
Yep.
Like, I think there's ways you can do Eminence that are okay. But my take is just, like, the miss rate is so high with the mechanic between Ur-Dragon and Edgar Markov. It just seems inherently risky to me. And I feel like if they just keep making them, like, sure, half of them will be fine, but the other half will be Ur-Dragons. And once you make an Ur-Dragon, it's there forever, right? It's the most popular commander forever. It's the saltiest commander forever. So I feel like the risk of them, even if 1 out of 10 is Ur-Dragon level, it still would make me wish they just didn't make the mechanic at all. Even if 9 out of 10 are fine, the 1 out of 10 ruins it for me.
Yeah, I think it's just maybe, yeah, you can do it where it's fine. But just imagine you play a game and you ask your friends, like, hey, can I make up my own rules? I promise if I don't make them too powerful, but I do make up my own rules that only I have to abide by and you don't. So my rule is my cards cost 1 less, okay? Or even, if I attack with my knights, I loot and I can just build around this. You can't. I have my own rules that work regardless of me casting my commander. It is, sure, you can do it in a non-broken way, but it is like, why? It's a little like alchemy. Like, why are you sure you can do this, but this is not too many good
I think the design tweak is that, like, just the actual card itself is going to be weaker than average. Like, the Ur-Dragon, if you ignore
that,
it's 9 mana. I know, but that's, like, where it's like, the main thing is, like, the Eminence is factored into its power. But you're right. It's, like, a little bit frustrating that it's, like, you don't have to do anything and you get value.
I don't like mechanics that you can't interact with. Like, I think it just is a principle. Like, I think you should be able to interact with basically everything. So on principle, I don't really like Eminence, how it plays. Even if some of the, like you said, some of the actual abilities are fine, but I still just, I think you should be able to interact with things.
No emblems?
Honestly, I've been in the emblem removal camp, but Wizards doesn't want to do it. So, but I would be fine with something that could remove an emblem. But anyway, let's move on to Phil. What's your next salty commander?
Okay, so my next one is absolutely disgusting. And I think a lot of people agree because it was, I think, 10th on the saltiest commander scale. It is Toxril the Corrosive, 7 mana, 7/7, Slug Horror. At the beginning of each end step, put a slime counter on each creature you don't control. Creatures you don't control get -1/-1 for each slime counter on them. And if it wasn't enough, whenever a creature you don't control with a slime counter on it dies, create a 1/1 black slug token and sacrifice a slug draw card for Demir colors. So that is every end step. So every end step, every creature that is not yours on the board gets killed from my lone estate. Everything that just dies immediately. And then they get value from it. And it is permanent. And it is in horrible colors because the ability is Demir, so they have protection, and Demir is disgusting by itself. And then it's so oppressive to play against.
I find this so aggressively not bad.
don't play Lotus and Jadar.
I play against Toxril, like, I don't know, like 5 times, which is not a lot. It's like usually pickup games because nobody in my regular play group has a regular one. But, like, this is so much scarier if you actually have it in a 99 than as a commander. Because you put it in the command zone, first of all, you put a target on yourself. It's 7 mana and you're not in green. And it has no inherent protection from removal. Like, sure,
yeah, I don't
when
have
it dies, you're going to reanimate it. But, like, it's 7 mana. It comes out so slow. And then, it's going to, if somebody doesn't have spot removal for the Toxril, It's going to board wipe, but it was a 7-mana board wipe.
Here's the thing, though, Tony. Here's the thing. It's not even a board wipe, though. I was actually going to say, if this was just a board wipe, it would probably be fine. But the fact that it, like, sticks around with the tox roll, right? Like, you can add counters to things. The tox roll can die. Then you can replay the tox roll, and everything's still going to get the -1/-1 based on how many counters are on it. I feel like they formatted this in a way specifically that makes it more obnoxious. Like, couldn't it just be on the end step? You put a -1/-1 counter on everything or something. Like, there, I feel like there are ways that you could have made it that would make it less painful, because I think a commander that comes down and rests the board is fine. But one thing we've seen from, like, Spreading Plague and some of those Crim cards is, like, cards that just repeatedly wrath the board again and again, those make people really salty. So I can see why people get salty. I agree with you that it is 7 mana, and it's kind of like, if you can't, you know, interact with something by turn 7 or whatever, like, what are you even doing? So I do get that point of it.
Turn 5.
But I do feel like they could have worded it in a way that would have essentially done the same thing, but made it, like, somewhat less salty and not as repeatable with the board wiping.
I'm more impressed by it. Not even salty about it. More
if they get you, you're
it.
Just like,
when it's in the 99. No, if they, like, bury it alive and then reanimate it.
Oh, right.
Like,
okay,
you got me. That's pretty effective. But if it's a command zone, I'm like, all right, okay, buddy. I know this. You basically lost, I think. Like,
we're going to kill you.
You didn't play lowness against it. It's so bad. If you can't, like, interact with it, you can. It's not. You can build your deck around ramping into this, and you can ramp in.
Hedron Archive.
Yeah, you could build your entire deck around ramping this out. And obviously, if you're Toxer, you better be doing that, or else when are you going to get your commander out? But, like, it's such a risky strategy. I've never seen it pan out well. Like, yeah, they'll be loaded with, like, reanimation and ramp spells, and it's like, all right, well, I got swords. Damn.
I think it also does depend on the deck you're playing, though. I could see, if you were playing Lannis against this, it would probably suck. I was thinking, I played a Lannis-style deck recently where, like, pretty much the entire deck was 2 toughness. It was, like, all creatures, and they mostly capped out at, like, 2 toughness. I would have never done anything against a Toxreal deck. Like, my whole deck would just cease to function. And we do know that's one thing that makes people salty. On the other hand, there'd be other decks I'm playing that are, like, bigger creatures and more removal, or maybe even not even creature heavy, and I'm like, eh, sure, whatever. Like, Toxreal, go for it. Play the Toxreal. What do I care? Let's... Let's move on. Let's move on to a commander that I think we will agree is not fine. This is, I think, the third saltiest commander on EDH Rec, and it's a classic. Vorinclex, Voice of Hunger. So Vorinclex, it's 8-mana 7/6 Praetor. It has Trample. It's a green card, so 8 mana, 8 mana. And then it says, whenever you tap a land for mana, you add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land could produce, so doubles your mana. And then the bad part, whenever your opponent taps a land for mana, that land doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. So essentially, you double your mana and have your opponent's mana, but the way you half your opponent's mana is they don't get their lands every other turn. So this obviously makes people salty because of the stacks mode, right? I mean, doubling your mana is also very powerful, but we have a lot of cards that can double your mana that are cheaper than Vorinclex. But making your opponent's lands not untap when they tap them is an incredibly annoying ability. And one of the things it does that makes it even more salty is it punishes the person that answers the Vorinclex. I've been in games where someone plays a Vorinclex and, like, everyone groans and, like, oh my god, this game sucks.
Yeah.
And there'll be one person that has the Wrath or whatever, and yeah, they can cast the Wrath to deal with it and get rid of the Vorinclex, but because they have to tap their lands to cast the Wrath, that means they have to essentially skip their next turn because their lands aren't going to untap. So it specifically punishes the person who should not be punished, which is the person who's spending their resources to get the problem off the table. So I think it's just, like, a really obnoxious design for Commander that I think could never really be fun or, like, not salty. It's just an inherently salty card. But where are you guys at on Vorinclex?
Yeah, I mean, I played it once. Yeah, I played it when we played. We made a point of playing commanders that we would never play again or something.
Oh, yeah, no.
I think afterwards I did that green break, right? Wasn't it like I played Vorinclex and, like, rammed out, like, crazy stacks and then didn't play green for 10 games or something or 10 weeks?
Oh. It is. This is one that does not rank high as far as how heavily it's played. This, maybe this is a Hikori one. On EDH Rec, Ranked 1640. So if Grand Arbiter was 150, this is 1/10 of as popular, roughly, as Grand Arbiter.
700 is, yeah.
It is monogreen.
This is one of those, is like, it's like talks where I'm like, I'm much more impressed by it when it's in the 99.
Yeah.
You know, if it's in the command zone, especially if it's, because you're not even in black to like reanimate this, you got to put that baby in back in the command zone. And now it's 10 mana to recast. Like, sure, you're in green. So I'm more accepting of this actually coming out consistently onto the battlefield. But like, man, it's such a target on your head. It's going to die. And then when it dies, what are you going to do? You're going to take a full turn off to cast it again, I guess.
That is true. So it's just like
in the 99, though. It's fine. It's quite effective.
Oh, yeah. Very good in the 99. It is funny. I think Praetors are the saltiest cycle of commanders they've ever made. Because if you just look at the EDH rec ranks, like, not only do you have Boring Clex ranked really high, mm-hmm. Elishnorn is in the like top 20-ish of most salty commanders. Jyn-Gataxias Korauger, the one that makes you discard your hand every turn, is up there. And then even some of the newer ones, like Elishnorn, Mother of the Machines from the second cycle, Jyn-Gataxias Progress Tyrant, those are on the Boring Clex Monstrous Raider. Those are on there too. They're just like Sheoldred. I don't know what Wizards was thinking, but these are just like, they're all so salty. Maybe it's the Phyrexian thing and they're supposed to. Maybe they want us to feel salty because they're the bad guys, and maybe they want that emotion out of us.
Last time they did them, they were fine, right? The flip ones are...
No, the flip ones...
Better.
Yeah, those ones kind of
And
suck,
they're kind
yeah.
of more interesting, actually. Like, the flip Sheoldred is almost in all my 99 in black decks.
Do you want my hot take?
What's your hot
take?
It's because
Magic players got soft.
Yep.
Like the original cycle was what, 2010, 2011, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, around
when,
there.
When New Phyrexian came out, that was before. It was before Commander became like an official format. Like EDH was obviously around for like very, very long before, like since near the beginning of Magic's history too. But like, yeah, before it became an official format, way before it became the most popular format of all time, way, way, way before that. And, you know, like the early days of Commander or the early days of Magic, we had, you know, like Stasis, we had Stone Rain.
Yeah.
We had like some of these cards were actually like tournaments playable, like Plow Under and stuff. Like, where these are real legitimate decks. Or like Sly, Red Sly, like the original versions of Mono Red Aggro was like, I think it was like a three drop, like Avalanche Riders was like a three drop. There was like a 2/1 of Haste of Echo, and they're like ETB blew up a land. Or it's like four mana, something like that. Like that was what mono red looked like. No Cori Steelcutters. I'm just blowing up your freaking lands. And that's like, that's how people play. Like And now people are like, oh no, you're stopping my banner monocon effects.
If you want a hotter take, Domer, it's Commander that's made Magic players too soft. Like the prevalence of Commander and the casualness of Commander, I think, is just like, has made Magic players way softer than they used to be. And if you've been playing Magic for a long time, it's very noticeable. Because I was definitely raised on the Stasises and the Orm's Chant locks, and like I love that stuff still. And that stuff, like, to a new player who started during the Commander is the biggest format era, it's the very opposite. It is the worst part of Magic for them. They just cannot deal with it. But yeah, I think it is definitely true that it has made Magic players way softer.
I'm also, because the comment section are going to be very mad at me, I'm not saying that it was better back then. I am just saying...
Back then we were real men, Tomer. We took our stone reins to our lands and smiled.
I'm not saying I want commanders to be like, turn three, I'm going to blow up your one land and we're going to have strip mine locks on everybody. I'm not saying that's better. I'm just saying we're all softer now because of Commander.
Yeah.
Because people want... There's the guiding principle of Commander is let everyone do the thing. And that kind of clashes towards, you know, everybody's being superpowered commanders being like, if you let me do the thing for a single turn, I'm going to win the game. There is issues with let people do the thing, but I feel like that guiding philosophy is better than, you know, everybody be stacks locked and stare at each other for 3 hours straight. I think this is better. Yeah. It has its issues, but like, I'm just explaining the idea behind Praetors at the beginning. They were before Commander's popularity. Don't get mad at me in the comments.
I thought we were going to title this like Saltiest Commanders or something, but the title might be Tomer Says Y'all Are Soft, something like that.
Commander players are babies.
Commander players are babies. From Tomer.
Top of the Reddit.
All right, let's Let's do one more. Let's do one more round. I think we're back to the top of the order. Tomer, what's your last pick for a salty commander?
I have a question.
Yes.
Phil, are you picking Korvold for the last one?
No, I took the last one. I take a little bit of a hot take in Roxanne because it symbolizes something.
I mean, I can do Turgrid if you don't want to do Turgrid, Tomer. I don't care.
Same, actually.
If you just want it to be mentioned, I don't mind doing it.
Sure. I wanted to talk Korvold. Where is Korvold?
Oh, Korvold. Oh, my
God. Is he top on the salt? Does he show up?
He's in like the next 20.
Not in the top 10.
He's like top 20. He's not top 10, but he's top. He's in the next group. So he's up there. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my last one that I want to bring to you is more of a personal one. This is something that bothered me a lot because I saw it a lot when it came out. And I actually played against it last week. Ooh. And it played just how I expected it would play. It's Korvold, Fae Cursed King. This is a 5-mana Jund legendary creature, dragon noble to 4/4 with flying. Whenever Korvold enters or attacks, you sacrifice another permanent. Cool. Whenever you sacrifice a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on Korvold and draw a card. Note that it doesn't say non-token permanent.
Yeah. Once
note
per
that
turn.
It doesn't say non-land, non-token permanent. Your fetches, they will give you a +1/+1 counter on Korvold and you'll draw a card. Your treasures that you're going to be sacrificing anyway to make mana. Oh, yeah, those are all going to get +1/+1 counters and draw cards. Just him entering and attacking will draw cards and put counters on him. Your aristocrat stuff that you're sacrificing. Just taking basic game actions is going to draw cards and make Korvold into a lethal threat. And I was like, I haven't seen this one in like a year or so, the last time I played it. And I was like, I played it at the game store last week and for Commander Night. And I'm like, how bad could it be? You know, I was playing Ben. I was playing Ben Aki Hermit. We were all in for like a chill game. He brings that Korvold and we're like, you know what? Well, let's see how it goes. Went to my friends exactly how you expected. There were treasures. There were fetches. There were aristocrats things. And just like casually, just like, yes, draw 5. Put 5 counters on Korvold. Yep, you took a game action. I'm going to sacrifice my treasures. It's a bolt bend, and then I'm also going to draw. That is like, yeah, this is not good. No. Not a good design. I'm not upset about like I think it's fine at bracket 4, you know, again, same thing. But like this was made as a Brawl commander. It was made for Brawl. It was made for as an introduction to the Brawl format. And I just like imagine the slew of when this sucker came out,
so
everybody's like all in these is the most popular Jund commander for a long time. New players were like, obviously, this is very exciting. And then I also remember like I played a friend of mine in my playgroup built it. And he's like, you know what? I'm not that type of Korvold. I'm going to make it a food deck, which, by the way, is probably what he was designed for, by the way. He came out in original Uldraine. Yeah. All of them were, you know, doing their core mechanics from that set. And obviously, Jund was doing food stuff. So this is obviously supposed to synergize with food. And he was like, I'm just running all food cards. It's very chill, you guys. It's way before, like, food had a lot of things. Smashed us. Destroyed us just for foods. Not a single fetch land or treasure to be seen. Just domination. And it's just like, I hate this design. I hate the design of like, I'm going to reward you immensely for taking basic game actions. Also why I don't like Lanefall. It's like, you played a land.
Ooh.
You cast Rampant Growth, the thing all green decks do. Here, my friend, draw some cards. And I'm like, just make me work for my value, please, Wizards of the Coast. Anyway, I had a rant. I had to get that off my chest.
That was a good rant. I will add, it also is a little bit of a time equity issue, Commander.
Insane.
I definitely remember some like
Magic
Con games where someone was playing Korvold. There's one that really sticks out in my mind, I think from last year at Vegas, where it was like 4-player game, obviously. One person was on Korvold, and it's like everyone has a normal turn. Korvold player plays for 20 minutes, doesn't really do much, like draw a ton of cards and grab a bunch of stuff, and then everyone takes their 1 minute turn, then back to the Korvold player for 20 more minutes. It's so brutal in that aspect too. And I think there has to be a higher standard. Wizards, if you're watching this, There should be a higher standard for commanders that you're putting in precons designed specifically for new players. I think you need to be, you want them to be exciting and fun. I'm not saying that, but I think you want to be extra careful with precon commanders to not make them salty cards or super arch enemy kind of salty cards, because you're just setting up a new player who doesn't know any better for a bad experience potentially. So I feel like Wizards needs to be extra careful with precon commanders, because those are the ones that are specifically going for a new player. If this was in Modern Horizons or some random set or something, I would be a little less harsh on it. But the fact that it's like the face of a precon designed to get new players into a format, that makes it especially egregious for me.
It's also not at all new player friendly, because the way it plays out really breaks your brain, because you need to draw your card and then your entire game changes and list of option changes. And then this kind of sucks.
Information overload.
If any card needed the once each turn, it's on the card draw. The pump is fine. It's like teeth and wormlet.
The pump is welcome. Please just kill me.
Pump is fine. The card draw is way too much. One thing I'm going to do, though, is when I'm back on Clash, I tried playing it in mono green. I am going to bring a colorless Cobalt deck and see if that is still broken.
I'm interested in.
Yeah, the question is just the fetches. Do I keep? I think if there's no fetches.
What can you fetch for?
Failed
to find.
No, not failed to find. I would just play colored lands. I'm still jumping.
No.
Is there a way? There's a way, maybe that's it. If I say I only play colorless lands as well.
And can you Evolving Wilds for a waste or no?
No, it does not have a basic land type.
Oh.
But is it? Wait, but can you get a... No, wait, you guys have to search for... Oh, that is... I think maybe now that you say it, maybe Evolving Wilds can search for... because it's
No idea.
Can you evolve wilds for a waste? Edit this out, I guess. Yes, you can Evolving Wilds for... can use Evolving Wilds to search a waste card, because waits have the subtype basic, because you're not searching a type. Yeah, you can fetch for waste.
You got some fetches.
But it's still a bad basic. It's not typed.
So, Prismatic Vista? There's one fetch that... colorless Cobalt coming up.
Maybe we got to do a colorless five color week or something. That would be interesting.
Or can we turn extremely powerful commanders into jank? Please don't try this with
Golo Scouts. I'm telling you, it's safe.
It's the same. It's the rerun.
Yeah, it's the same. I will also say, I didn't want to. I'm not bashing the person that I played against last. Very nice person.
We agreed to it too.
He said, "Hey, is it okay if I play Corval?" And we all said yes. And I was genuinely curious to see how it went. And it's going to always be high-powered. And it's fine at bracket four. If you want a high-powered commander, this is a fantastic choice. I just do not like the design philosophy behind this card. I feel you have to work for the value a little bit more.
Go on Arena and play it in Brawl. It is a little bit. I mean, it even dominated Standard a bit, which made it super pricey back in the day.
It's all Pioneer at one point. Play it.
Good at Standard.
Oh, yeah.
There were actually decks built around it, yeah.
Oh, my God. Tulane had the same issue, very similar.
It also draws cards mid-turn and then keeps drawing cards, and your options change, and it just breaks brains. It breaks my brain, and if it's...
I feel like Tulane is just a smidge better, because you actually have to cast a creature spell, but the fact that you draw a card and you get to put a lane untapped into the battlefield
is more things and draw more cards and put more lands into play.
At the very least, put the lane tapped, so that it stops, I'm not chaining together one drop or something. My God.
I'm telling you, Throne Eldraine was a wild time in Magic. They just pulled out all the stops on power level during that time.
Oh my God.
All right, Phil, what is your final pick for a salty commander?
All right, here comes a bit of a weird pick, but it symbolizes a thing that could also be for other cards, and this is just the most interesting card I can describe it with. It is Roxanne Starfall Savant, and I wouldn't say I would never decline to play against this. I would love to have a Roxanne deck, just full disclosure. 5 mana, 4/3. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, create a tapped colorless artifact token named Meteorite with when this enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to each target and it taps for mana. just like the card Meteorite. And then when you tap an artifact token for mana, add one mana of any type of that artifact token produced. So your artifact tokens tap for extra mana. That's treasures and meteorites and copies of Signets, I guess. Skyclave, Relic or something. And if you build your commander, if you build around this, which is super fun and kind of unique actually, you will probably build around ramping with treasures. You're still in green, so you probably, since this is five mana, you would have also cast your Rampant Growth and three visits. So you are kind of the problem of, hey, I play green and ramp. And then the why I think this is salty, kind of, the card, it's not the card's fault, but you gotta shoot the two damage somewhere. And I love playing stuff like Lourdes and Jadar and General Ferris Rockerick that all died to this, and they all just die to it without the player saying, I mean, I gotta shoot somewhere. And then you become like a casualty of
I'm so sorry
them getting value. And they say, no, I'm like an artifact ramp token deck, but on the side, like at a side note, they just wreck me, and then they always wreck me when they attack, because I'm not going to shoot two damage at your face with this meteorite. I'm going to kill your commander. That costs seven mana now or something. So it is. And another card that is similar, which is way easier to explain as a salty commander, is probably Elishmon, Mother of the Machines, because that is like, oh, I want to double up my triggers, but then I also wreck you. But I think Roxanne is just funnier to explain this with, because it is an interesting commander, but just on the side, I'm getting wrecked specifically with my small little synergy commander, and then they ramp and do crazy things. But the thing that really bums me is them attacking with this to create a token that kills my commander again and again. And I love the card, by the way. I almost thought about building it, but it's randomly salty.
I think we've learned that things that interact with Lannis makes Phil a little bit salty. That seems to be the theme. Doesn't kill my Lannis.
I mean, I totally get that. Like, if your commander is two toughness and it sees a Roxanne against you, you're like,
incidentally,
getting wrecked. It's
brutal. I get it. It's also funny because I love Roxanne. I built up under my budget brews, I did one of her, and the nice thing about her too is that she's kind of like the Golos issue, where she pays for her own commander tax if you kill her, but she ETBs, makes a meteorite that taps her mana, and then, you know, so that meteorite that she made can pay for her commander tax, could help pay for commander tax, so you can cast her next turn, and then you make another meteorite, and you're not like, it's slowing you down, but not that much, you know? Like, you're still advancing your board state, you're still ramping as you're recasting Roxanne and stuff, so she's actually quite resilient to removal. And then just like, her ramp is also tied to her win condition, right? You're gonna start, you know, shocking people, but then doubling damage, and then maybe you double all the meteorites that you have, and now you have like 32 cool damage going at somebody's face. It's disgusting. It's brutal if you have like a one or two toughest commander that you deal on the battlefield. And it's like, well, where is this meteorite damage going to go to? It's not going to get to your face.
You can't shoot it in the face if there's something to kill. Like my soul wounds.
It's kind of funny. The issue we talked about a couple weeks ago with Aura Shards, right? Kind of the similar thing where once Aura Shards down, eventually it starts sniping the mana rocks and stuff that you don't even really care about killing that much just because you got a target. Or something. So I think, I can see how that would be very salty, especially for specific decks. Like, some decks don't really care that much, but other decks, it's gonna just accidentally ruin your day without even trying to.
I wouldn't decline to play against this. I would play a different deck. I would just play Maids from Rondra or something. This one's kind of easy to
that'd
dodge
be fair.
The salty part.
That'd be fair.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah, something that lines up better with it. All right, for my last pick, we can't do a salty commander podcast and not mention, I think, the second most salty commander behind Vivi, which actually surprised me. Vivi's ahead of this. I mentioned it offhand during the intro, but we got to talk Turgrid, God of Fright. So Turgrid, it's a 5 mana 4/5. It's got menace. It's a god. It says whenever your opponent sacks a non-token permanent or discards a permanent card, you can put that card. You may put that card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. It's got a backside that doesn't really matter. Turgrid's Lantern. It's an artifact that taps to make target player lose 3 life unless they sack a permanent you can pay for to
untap it, or sack a permanent or discard a card. No one really plays the backside. That's not the scary part of this card. The front part of the card, this is like the most brutal. You don't get to play the game, Commander, I think, because not only do you not get to play the game and you don't get to pop off and do the thing you were trying to do, but you have to watch the Turgid player take the cards that you were going to do cool things with and then beat you down with them, which is a whole nother layer of frustration and brutality, right? Like, because if you play Turgid, what are you going to do? You try to wrath away your opponent's hand and try to make your opponent sacrifice away their board. Because the more you do that, the more things you get on your side of the battlefield, and then you win the game eventually. So it just rewards you for making your opponents not do anything. Think of how Krim plays, but with way more discard thrown in. Like, that to the extreme. But then just, like, the psychological damage of eventually losing to your own cards makes it even worse. So this card, I think, is super salty, and I don't even know. I guess you could build like a Turgrid's Lantern deck and promise the table you'll never play the front side. And maybe that would be how you could build a non-salty version of Turgrid. It would be pretty bad, but you could do it.
Hey, I did this.
I mean,
Clash,
it would just be
actually
a combo deck, right? Like,
wait, you actually
make
did
infinite
that?
Mana?
I did like artifacts, black, mono black artifacts, untap combo.
Oh.
And it was pretty, I mean, you just power ramp and then. Yeah, you just promised
him. Yeah, if you have ways of untapping it, then you win the game, right?
So. Eventually,
it is pretty cool.
All this stuff, yeah.
That said, Turgrid, no. I would refuse to play. There's no way to have fun against this.
I feel like...
that's not a cool commander. It makes you very unlikable on the table. I would just decline.
So I've only played against Turgrid like 3 times. In the history of it being around, which is like 5 years now at this point or something like that, Kyle time. And each time the person who played it was the sweetest person and a complete gentleman. It was like, you know, I know Turgrid's really salty, but could you please like let us play like just one game? And it was like end of the night, you know, it's like, okay, we'll play. Why not? We'll just see. We're already mentally prepared for the Turgrid. It was still not enjoyable because
it's
never going to be. Look, Turgrid dies, right? Turgrid did not, like, we played a couple games. One time Turgrid popped off and the game ended. It's actually worse if Turgrid does get removed, though, because their decks are filled with just hand discard, the smallpox, large pox, you know, dark deal. Everybody sacrifice all their creatures, play crafter loops and stuff. And, like, Turgrid is actually the blessing over here. It's actually the mercy in disguise.
Because it makes you die.
Because at the very least, now they have all the cards you discarded in sacrifice, and you're gonna die, okay? But God forbid you kill Turgrid and they're like, well, I have all these cards in my hand and I need to live, right? And then it's just like, all right, pox you. Death Cloud you. And it's like, well, all right, now nobody has anything and the game starts from square one, except, oh, by the way, you have no hands. The game is just freaking long. It's freaking long, hard to kill the Turgrid player. And the game just goes on forever. So like Turgrid, it's a mercy killing over there. You want her to live so that the game can actually end, or else God forbid they just start casting like the poxes and stuff about Turgrid.
Never gonna finish it. I don't think there's ever been a time where I've said I won't play against a commander. But Turgrid is about as close as it gets for me. Like, I think out of all the commanders we talked about today, this is probably the one that I would be closest to being like, you know what? I actually just don't want to play against. I don't want to play against that right now. I'm sorry. But
I want the game to end.
Please. Yeah. Just make me die, please. So anyway, those are the saltiest
before we
commanders.
Leave.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Before we leave. Deadpool. And that is it. We said it. I know. Everybody knows. Yes.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
That
enough.
Is my
I'm
salty,
not even going to say.
Actually.
Yeah.
I'd rather play against Turgrid.
We did honestly decide we weren't going to talk about Deadpool because
we've talked about it so much.
But viewers, yes, it is incredibly salty for all of
Deadpool
us. I think it makes us all very, very salty, honestly. And Krim's not even here to defend it. So maybe we should have done it just so we could bash Deadpool for an hour. But
get him.
Anyway, everyone, that's our podcast for this week. Those are the saltiest commanders. Do you play them? Do you like them? Do you play against them? Is there any way to make them unsalty? Let us know what you think in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a spectacular week. And this is the crew signing out.